I'm Anthony Bachman from All Things Good and Nerdy, a geeky podcast part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other fantastic geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And welcome to Play Comics, where once again, finally again, however this works out with recording stuff, we are looking at a video game based on a comic property in a really roundaboutish way. Because today I have Mike Shea with us and we are looking at Digimon World for the PlayStation 1. Mike, how are you doing today?
I'm great, man. How are you?
I'm excited to reconnect with you. I'm excited to be looking at Digimon. I'm sure nobody knows this. We both went to college together for a little bit.
We did. Yeah, for one full year.
It was an amazing year.
I'll tell you what, that first year of college, like to this day, I have like Vietnam-esque flashbacks to the shenanigans that I allowed myself to get into. And I'm like, I should have a criminal record, honestly.
It is amazing what you can get into when the only thing keeping the city your college is in from being absorbed by a much bigger city is a state border.
Literally, if North and South Carolina ever become one state, Charlotte's just going to absorb Rock Hill, and that'll be the end of it.
I actually kind of want to see that now.
I actually kind of do too, now that I think about it. Let's unify the Carolinas. One Carolina. No, a lot of Carolinians are mad at me right now. That's fine. I can live with that.
Oh, well. They'll get over it.
What are they going to do? Come to Ohio? They'll freeze.
Well, they want to send everybody else back to Ohio.
Yeah, I know. You know, it's not that bad here. You know, I have an abundance of concerts, but that's another story for another time.
Today, the story is all about Digimon, something that I learned very recently is not a Pokemon ripoff.
No, it is not. You could argue the other way around.
So the reason I said this is kind of a roundabout way of being based on a comic earlier is that the original forms of Digimon were, for lack of a better way of saying it, somebody looking at Tamagotchi and said, why don't we make them fight?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I have one upstairs.
Wait, are you for real?
That I just bought a couple months ago. They still make them.
Why? But also, that's really cool.
I know. It was one of those we'll talk about this later, but I was playing one of the more recent Digimon World sequels, and I was like, you know, I wonder if they still make those things. And they do, and they're like $10 on Amazon. And I was like, you know what? The hell with it. Ordered it. And yeah, I remember how much fun they were to play with, but also just how much they drive you crazy. Because 7 a.m., feed me, for the love of God, feed me. And I work nights, so 7 a.m., I'm not awake. But it's kind of just this cool little bit of nostalgia that I get to carry around in my pocket with me.
That is really cool. I never had one of those growing up. I also never got around to watching the Digimon anime or reading the Digimon manga. But I figured for the purposes of this show, the manga came before the show. I don't care about the little Tamagotchi type thing. That's just a cool little thing.
Yeah.
Because in my brain, Digimon didn't really become Digimon until you had the manga.
And you know, believe it or not, the manga was something I never got super into. Anime and manga is one of those things that's always escaped my nerddom. It's the one corner of nerddom that I've just never been able to get as into. I did watch the kids anime show growing up because I was 9 and it had Digimon in it. Same with the Pokemon ones as well. But yeah, it's crazy how much like rich lore there is in Digimon that most people I think just aren't aware of, and it's kind of fascinating to delve into.
So why don't you tell me about some of that, because I tried to crash course it and it went about as well as you would expect.
Well, now that we're in, you know, the internet age, there, you know, you can create your own Wikipedias basically for different things. So there's a great one for Digimon, and reading on all the different, you know, hidden abilities and just, you know, ways of the what, you know, they channel into themselves to grow. And then just, you know, the movies especially do a great job of really kind of world building this stuff, you know, that starts with the first Digimon movie, which a lot of Americans might not realize the American version was actually three movies combined into one. But just how big and vast the digital world itself is. We've seen so many different variations of it, and it's so great when you can see how they all do kind of interconnect with each other. Even in something like the Digimon Tamers season of the anime, which I think was technically season 3, which was kind of crafted as if it existed in our world, because they reference the TV show as if they themselves had been watching it. They play the Digimon card game as if they themselves were fans, and then it just turns out that Digimon happened to be real. And it's kind of shows like how much of a blank slate Digimon really is, and how many different ways you can they've been able to twist it and manipulate it and adjust it so that they can cover all these different kinds of themes, whereas with Pokemon you're kind of limited to kid goes hiking, throws a ball, Pokemon gets older, grows wings, earn badges, end of story. There's not as much depth or variation into how in recent years they've tried to incorporate it, I think, with the, and I fell off Pokemon a long time ago, but a lot of the newer elements introduced, like, you know, how certain Pokemon look different based on the region and mega evolutions, and I'm like, yeah, you know what, Digimon did all that long before Pokemon did. So it kind of is a testament to how pervasive those ideas are, that even now, all these years later, the property that essentially won that war is still borrowing elements from the loser of that war.
Really, I think the two of them coexist in a way that it's almost perfect, because of just the similarities and differences they have there, because you can really easily see the influence between the two of them. But I feel like probably up until the very recent Pokemon generations, I could probably look at a random monster and know whether it's Digimon or Pokemon.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting that you say that, because as you said it, I think you're absolutely right. The best equation I can give it, and this is real nerdy stuff, I almost look at like Digimon is Magic the Gathering, Pokemon is Yu-Gi-Oh. Because like Yu-Gi-Oh was kind of like heavily influenced by Magic the Gathering, but very simplified. Digimon was this, you know, this weird alien, these weird alien otherworldly monsters interacting with humans and growing and changing and battling in supernatural ways. Pokemon was that, but very kid friendly. A lot of Digimon had to be toned down when it came over to the States, because it was a series that got very dark and very serious. Again, like in the movies get incredibly dark. And I think that's kind of goes to what you were saying, where yeah, it's the Pokemon in general look very cartoony, very, you know, something that's not gonna scare a kid. but there are Digimon that could genuinely give a child nightmares.
I really don't know why I didn't get into this as a kid. I mean, I'm a few years older than you, but still, like, kind of in that prime age of, here's this cool thing. Like, none of my friends ever had any issue with anybody our age liking Pokemon. It's just whatever region I was in, Digimon was never the thing.
And you know, that's that you hear, I hear that from a lot of people. Honestly, it was something about Pokemon, and I've yet to really put my finger on it. Actually, you know what? I'll make one more super nerdy comparison. It's Star Trek versus Star Wars. Star Wars is, you know, they're both sci-fi. Star Wars is a bit more fantasy, but they're both sci-fi. And it's on the surface level, it's easy to confuse the two. But when you get down to it, you know, Star Wars, and I say this as a fan of both, Star Wars is, you know, very cut and dry, simplistic, more focused on the adventure, and that's kind of it. Whereas Star Trek isn't afraid to be a bit more tame, a bit more thoughtful, scientific in its nature. It really leans on the sci of the sci-fi. And I think that's kind of where Digimon and Pokemon is. Most people, you're more likely to find people who are willing to brag about being Star Wars fans than you are Star Trek fans, as opposed to people who are going to say more into being Pokemon fans and more recognizable with Pokemon than they are with Digimon. And I feel like that's kind of how that same relationship is. One is, God, I think Star Trek has the more involved fan base, but Star Wars has the bigger fan base, and I think Digimon is kind of the same way. Its fan base is very involved, very deep-seated in all the little intricacies of it, whereas Pokemon is just a bit more, it's broader audience.
So what are some of the Digimon highlights for you?
For me, I mean, I will definitely say in terms of the, like, if you're in terms of the TV shows, the first three series were definitely where they were at their strongest in terms of world building, building out that lore I mentioned, and getting into some higher concept stuff. Particularly, again, season three was where it kind of did a bit of fourth wall breaking, because we'd have these two incredible seasons about these kids with their Digimon partners in the Digimon world and different concepts they introduced into that. And then season three, again, was this kind of fourth wall breaking show where it was as if actual fans of Digimon suddenly discovered that Digimon really did exist. And that show is one of the ones that really, you can tell, was a darker show, a more serious show. There were much darker implications. So the first three runs of that, the first three series of that show are fantastic. Again, as someone who's not a huge anime fan, I will say if you can get the subbed movies, they're all fantastic with great writing, great voice acting, great dialogue. But also, you know, there's like six of them, and they managed to have this overarching story through all six, which you don't typically see in a lot of these anime movies. You see, especially like Dragon Ball Z or something like that, the movies are kind of one and done stories. They don't have any kind of real impact on anything else in, you know, Dragon Ball Z as it is, whereas the Digimon movies pulled from the series and had an impact on them as well, introduced concepts that got to be explored later on, that the things that were set up way at the beginning of the first movie paying off in the end. And then just the video games themselves, again, playing into that idea of all the different ways you could approach this same property. Every video game from one to the next is completely different, but you also still have this sense of familiarity. There are still some base rules and ideas that hold true throughout all of it. And then you get to still kind of play in this sandbox with familiar toys, but you get to create all new stories with them. And it never feels alien. It never feels like you can't grasp what's going on, because again, it still has that. It's like when a band puts out an album that's really experimental. Like, it's still very much that band. You recognize the tones, but they get a little more creative with the execution of it. And that's kind of the biggest, I think, success that Digimon has had, is just its endless limit for creativity with its own property.
That band example just made me think about Bad Religion's second album.
Yeah, no, that's really a great example. It's a great example, actually. Well, Avenged Sevenfold, anything Avenged Sevenfold, every album is so drastically different, but it still also has very familiar undertones, so you recognize who the band is, maybe just not the style they're doing with that song. Even Metallica, as much as people don't like the Saint Anger album, it still very much sounds like Metallica, just not good Metallica. But that's neither here nor there.
I'm sure we'll have people yelling at us on the internet for that anyway.
Find me on Twitter at Mr. Mike Shea. It's fine.
So really what it sounds like is I need to go watch the show more than just like, hi, here's a YouTube video telling me all the quick highlights of it, because I don't have time to watch three seasons of a show.
Yeah, it's, and that's kind of the cool part about it too, is it's a kid's show when everything's said and done. So if you were to find it online, you're talking easily digestible 20-minute episodes. You know, it was a Saturday morning cartoon. It's one of those things, you know, the three seasons, you could binge them in a day easily. But it's also just, it's an entertaining show. You know, it's one of those shows, it was on Netflix for a little while. I don't know if it still is or not. It's one of the few that still kind of holds up. Pokemon, the early seasons, I don't feel hold up as well. The Yu-Gi-Oh! Anime, those first couple seasons really don't hold up at all, mostly because they hadn't established the rules of the card game yet, so it kind of makes that a little bit weird. But Digimon's one of the ones that you go back to those first couple seasons, and they still do a really good job of holding up. And like I said, if it's something that you really want to delve into, you know, a couple seasons of 20-minute episodes that run pretty quick and kind of don't have too much fluff. That's something that I feel like with like a lot of shows, especially back in the early 2000s, where you had 20 episode seasons, you get a lot of fluff and a lot of filler. There's not a whole lot of filler in any season of Digimon. Every episode tries to accomplish something, which you didn't see a lot of that in kids programming or any programming for that matter. So it was really well executed.
And then just the fact that I have picked up that I'm going to make our listeners know, because I also know it. Angela Anaconda popping up before the first movie. What the heck?
Yeah, that was, again, the first movie, as Americans know it, is actually a combination of three movies put into one and redubbed to make them make sense. It's really, the Angela Anaconda thing is so stupid. It was a show that Nickelodeon was really trying to make work, and it was not working. It was like in its first season, and they were putting all their backing into it, and nobody liked it. I think that show lasted maybe two seasons. But yeah, it's one of those, if you ever get around to watching the actual Japanese versions of the movies, you can, and you pay attention to the dialogue, and you're like, oh man, they changed a lot to make these three movies fit together into one. And also they cut out a lot, because it's, you know, taking three movies that are about an hour and a half each and combining them into one hour and a half movie. Yeah, that happened. I even remember being a Digimon fan, watching that movie in theaters and going, this sucks and it doesn't make any sense. And then come to find out later on what happened. And when I saw the original versions, again, as somebody who's not usually a big anime fan, I was like, these are way better than what I got in the theater. And there's no Angela Anaconda.
Yeah, I always kind of liked Angela Anaconda, but I'm a weirdo.
To each their own, man. To each their own.
So I think we're going to go think about how we should try to learn Japanese before we realize that was a dumb time every other time we tried to do it, and it's going to be a dumb thing now while I drop some promos for a few other shows.
Welcome to our channel, The Nerd Crusade. I'm Beastie Boy.
I'm Table.
I'm Red.
It is I, Shino Brando.
We discuss topics from across the nerdiverse, from video games, anime, comics, and more.
And if you want to chat with us, you can find us on Twitter at CrusadeNerd, on Instagram at NerdCrusade, on Twitch 8 p.m. Mountain Standard Time every single week. You can find us wherever podcasts are found by searching Nerd Crusade.
And that's to be continued.
Do your hobbies include comic books, movies, television, and or video games?
Are you always behind with the latest news in the world of nerd?
Well, look no further than the Oblivion Bar, a nerd culture podcast.
Great Scott!
Hosted by Chris Hacker and Aaron Knowles, the Oblivion Bar offers a weekly review of all the latest breaking news, in-depth discussions far beyond whether Han shot first, and newsletter section, where you, the listener, send in your questions to be answered live on the show.
New episodes every Monday, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts.
I'm just so freaking excited!
You can also find us on Twitter, at Oblivion Bar Pod.
Come join us at the Oblivion Bar Podcast.
Hope to see you there.
Those are some great shows you should check out. But first, let's finish up with this one. So, Mike, I don't know what you're going to feel about this, but okay. For probably 3 weeks or so, I actually owned this game.
Okay.
And then I turned around and sold it because the guy was dumb and wanted to give me way too much money for it.
Okay, well, as from a capitalism standpoint, good on you. Well done, sir. Bravo. I do think you missed out on some great gameplay, though. I actually do have a very big soft spot in my heart for this game.
Digimon World came out for the PS1 in 2000 over here in North America. It had been out in 99 in Japan. Later, it came out on computers, but we don't care about those on this show because computers are stupid.
Yeah, case in point, the amount of computer trouble we had trying to get this thing going today.
Oh, God, that's a bonus episode in itself.
Yeah, computers suck right now. Sorry, I love you, computers, but I hate you at the same time.
This game was developed by BEC and kind of reworked a little bit for the U.S. market by Flying Tiger. BEC is a very interesting case in itself. Back then, I'm also seeing them credited as BB Studio. I'm not sure which is correct, because there's also a point where the companies merged and renames happened, and it really doesn't matter, because BEC basically made Mobile Suit Gundam games, Dragon Ball games, a few other things like that. They did a Neon Genesis Evangelion thing, but not a whole lot that came out over here. Flying Tiger did basically nothing at all that came out over here, except for Growlancer Generations, which I only want because it's a working designs game and I just think all of their games are beautiful, and Bandai, which is the one of the like anime giants over here.
Yeah, I mean, Bandai was one of those things. Anything you watched in the States that had any kind of Japanese influence on it, Bandai had their hand in it. They did stuff with Digimon was definitely one of the big ones. I feel like if I remember correctly, they did stuff with Power Rangers at one point. I mean, they kind of worked on just about anything. I mean, like I said, if it had a Japanese influence, you saw that Bandai logo slapped on there. Ultraman was one.
Like, so many things. I'm not even going to try to go through a list, because it really is that much. But the thing about this game is that it is an action RPG. So, kind of like Pokemon, you get one of these monsters to start with, and then you just kind of roll through the game as one does in an RPG. Unlike Pokemon, you don't really get to pick who you're starting with. Although these days you kind of can, because you can look up a walkthrough for it.
Yeah, but even and some people do that, and that's fine. I kind of like the mystery of it. Especially because back then with this game in particular, there weren't as many options. You know, you kind of did a quick little questionnaire at the beginning, and that would give you one of two rookies. It was basically, your choices were basically Agumon or Gabumon. And your Digivolution tree didn't have a lot of variation to it. Because it was really kind of just meant to be the digital pet in video game form, really. The game had nothing to do with the series. It was just kind of meant to be a role-playing game, but also kind of, like I said, the digital pet in real time.
Let's talk about that not connected to the series at all, because this game is weird. As far as I can gather, you're trying to revive a city.
Yeah, basically it was a digital city that, through the rule of, and I'm trying to remember the name of the evil villain, because it gets reused in the later game, Machine Dramon. The city's been wiped out, the Digimon who were there fled, and you're trying to convince them to come back and build the city up to its former glory, and also kind of figure out why there's this, you know, general evilness in the world. Now, again, I don't know how much of this is just simply a poor translation from the Japanese version to the American version. It's kind of hard to tell, especially for the time that it came out. I kind of want to get my hands on a Japanese version and see how it plays comparatively. But yeah, it's a very strange but simplistic approach, because I feel like the focus was meant to be on the raising of your Digimon partner and less so much about the story itself.
Well, I mean, you do have to actively go take your Digimon to the bathroom.
Yeah, and in recent releases since then, that is still a thing. That is still a thing. And if you don't, that affects how they grow. If they poop on the ground too many times, it can affect what they'll eventually digivolve into. Which is, again, it's kind of a neat idea in terms of just how invested you are. And I think it also helps create that separation from Pokemon, because Pokemon, it's just fight, 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 level up, fight, 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 level up. There's not really a whole lot of other depth to it, as opposed to with Digimon, it's all of those different things. Like with raising a child or a pet of your own, all of those different things play into how they will grow and develop into the next version of themselves. It's an interesting idea, but it is also kind of a pain in the butt having to always find a bathroom every 20 minutes.
I just never would have thought that somebody would be able to make parenting the video game and get 12-year-old boys to want to play it.
Well, when you're parenting a giant fire-breathing lizard with an armored shell on his head, it helps.
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense there. So, being a at least early kind of proto-open-ish world game, what kind of trouble could you really get yourself into beyond, like, game-breaking glitches?
Not too terribly much, really. I mean, your biggest fear, kind of going on what you were just talking about, was just making sure that you took good enough care of it that it didn't turn into this little green slug thing called a Numamon, because they were weak and slow and basically useless, and they were kind of, it was kind of almost like a, the same thing with, this would happen with the digital pet too. If you didn't take good enough care of it, it would turn into one of these things, and they're basically, it's just kind of like a punishment. It's like, oh, you didn't take good care enough of your cool fire-breathing lizard? Have a slug that eats its own poop. And its attack was to throw poop. Like, it was almost like that was kind of the encouraging factor, is make sure you take good care of this thing or you're going to get a poop slug. But beyond that, there's not a whole lot of risk for the amount of reward that you can get in the game. Eventually, I think the idea was because you spend a lot of time, especially early on in the training grounds, boosting the stats, because the higher your stats are for your partner before they die and are reborn in another egg, the higher they'll be able to go. It helps extend their life expectancy. You know, when you're first starting out, you have a low life expectancy for your partner. The more you train them up before they die and are reborn, then the longer they'll be able to live in their next lifetime. So it's, but again, it's low risk, high reward. Everything you do, you're not really at risk of losing much or having too much of a negative effect on your partner. Eventually they die, they're reborn, and then you can just do a better job the next time. So yeah, not a lot at stake, short of just never completing the story, which for a simple story, there's still a lot to do to actually complete the objective, the main objective. But again, it's, I think they really just kind of leaned. Other sequels would be more about the introduce higher risk for the rewards you get, very much more plot driven. This one's less plot driven than its future sequels.
Wait, so you were saying you kind of want your character to die?
Well, it's inevitable. Your partner is going to die no matter what. They have a certain number of days that they will live before they will just die of quote-unquote old age. But the stronger you make them before they die, the longer they will live in their next life, and the more you'll be able to do with them. Because, you know, the highest Digivolution level you can reach in the first Digimon world is the ultimate level. Higher levels are introduced later on in other games and other sequels. But to be able to get them to live long enough to reach ultimate takes a lot of time. And that's where kind of the need to go through and actually experience the story of the game plays into it, because eventually just sitting there in the training center will get boring. But by having this other story out there where they can go and explore other areas, which also play a factor, you know, if your Digimon partner has an aversion to heat and you're inside the volcano, that affects their ability to do combat, that affects their stats. Or if you're in the icy area and they have an aversion to cold, that'll have an effect on it. If they're nocturnal, they might not want to do as much during the day. If, you know, things like that play a factor as well. So it's all about just trying to make sure that you have them in peak condition when they do eventually die of age, so that when they come back, the next one will be able to take you even further.
Okay, so parenting and working around planned obsolescence.
Basically, yeah. That's You know, your first kid's gonna be a dud, but you use that one as an example for how to raise the next one. That's why Catholic families like mine have so many kids.
So would you say that Digimon World is just a giant capitalism campaign?
I wouldn't go that far. I think the Pokemon games, I think, lean into that more, because let's be honest, you've played one Pokemon game, you've played them all, and I've played many, but they all follow the same beats. They're all very much the only time new mechanics get introduced with the Pokemon games is when there's a new console. And even then, it's like not that big of a difference. I mean, the biggest thing the DS introduced with Pokemon was, oh, cool, now I can touch a button and open my backpack. With Digimon, there's a lot of problem solving, because like a lot of what you need to do, you need to, like, you know, read the information, you know, talk to the right other characters, understand what's being said to you. There's a lot of problem solving that goes into the actual story of the game. Even the current next Digimon World Next Order is a lot of the same mechanics as the original Digimon World, but still has that, like, you need to have like some decent problem solving skills, and it helps you develop those problem solving skills, I think, by saying, okay, they need this kind of thing. I need to go to an area where that might exist. Let me talk to people, find out where maybe that can be found, figure out where that's at, and work my way through it. I think that kind of takes away from that idea of being a cash grab, because at the end of the day, you're just trying to learn how to essentially make the best version of your partner while also developing your own skills as a problem solver and find a way to make those two coexist.
So looking at the anime and the manga, at least as far as you have, what do you think this game really gets right looking at Digimon?
As far as what it gets right in terms of being a Digimon property, it gets the idea of the vastness of the world right, building out the importance of building out that lore, not recycling a lot of the same avatars in this game, and also just that idea of with Pokemon, they're basically just animals. Are they intelligent animals that can shoot fire and lightning and all that? Yeah, but they're essentially just animals. You know, you could almost treat them as just slightly more intelligent livestock. The Digimon, however, I mean, they communicate. They have almost, the only thing that separates them from humans a lot of times is the fact that, like, you're a human and one's a giant bird that, you know, can communicate, but they have specific roles they play within their own community. And so that was something that translated from the other properties, the manga and the anime, very well into the game, because that's something that's established very early on in the series, that, like, yeah, we're animals, but we have full-fledged personalities, personal skill sets that do not, it's not like not every Agumon has the same skill set, you know. It's everyone is an individual, and that's something that I think really translated well into the game from the series.
And I think one thing to keep in mind when looking at this is just when this came out along with the series, over here in America, when the game came out, you had Digimon Adventure, like the second season of it had come out, but when the game first came out in Japan, it was only the first series.
Yeah. So they didn't have as much to implement from the series into the game. It was kind of released just almost like a companion piece more than anything else. Not even a companion piece, just as another property featuring these characters, but it created almost like a separation, which I think was important, because a lot of people with Pokemon would watch the show, play the game, and there's significant differences that people who maybe got into the Pokemon from the show might have been missing in the game. People who were playing the game first might have been missing it in the show. With Digimon, because they were released almost the same time, but there's enough of a separation, which is why I think it was smart that the game wasn't based on the show directly, that you can watch the show, enjoy it for what it is, play the game, enjoy it for what it is, and there's enough of a separation that you don't feel like FOMO for one or the other. But again, that core component of what the Digimon are still remains true, so you still get that satisfaction for what it is that makes the show and the game interesting.
And what do you think this game really gets wrong looking at Digimon?
The not enough variation in terms of who the like the Digivolution chart. Again, it's not very big. And in terms of, like, yeah, like the training is very repetitive. And the plot itself is still incredibly simple. As much as it's fun, it's incredibly simple, which kind of takes away from some of the replay value of the game in later years. Other sequels, I think, would improve upon that. But also, again, it looking back on it in retrospect, knowing when the game came out in terms of in relation to the creation of the property, it's obvious they still hadn't quite figured out everything they wanted to do yet, because it was not long after this that the show and the card game and everything else were introducing these other concepts So the game, when it, by the time it came out in the States, was already, had already kind of dated itself. I think they could have done with holding off on releasing this game until a couple of seasons into the show and had time to incorporate those concepts into the game.
Yeah, that's always a tough one. I think the biggest thing for me, even with how little I've had a chance to really look at the series, is that in that first series, things happen. And in the game, they don't. Really.
Yeah. Well, like I said, the game tried to be more based on the virtual pet than the series. But so with the digital pet, you know, the way the ranking system is, your Digimon starts off as a baby, becomes what's called an in training, then a rookie, a champion, and an ultimate. And the ultimate is the highest level of evolution it can reach. By the time that game came out in the States, the card game and the series had already introduced a mega evolution, which is the next level up. So then when you're playing the game, it's like, oh, well, here's these other evolution characters I'd like to have that I already know exist, that I know in no way, shape, or form are going to exist in this game. So there's kind of that, like, you get there and then you realize it's as high as you can go, and it kind of feels like a bit of a bummer in that regard.
And if you knew somebody who wanted to get into Digimon, would you give them this game as a bit of a primer course? Kind of forgetting the fact that other games exist.
Yeah, if somebody wanted to get into Digimon for the first time ever, I would tell them to start with this game, because it's very minimalist compared to everything that comes after. Because everything that comes after this gets really, again, they get really creative and experimental with the concepts surrounding these characters. So I think the game is kind of the best starting off point to just kind of get introduced to the core concepts of what they look like, the idea of Digivolution, and just the individuality of each of the different kinds of Digimon that exist. Once you can get your head around that, then delving into the show, when it eventually introduces these higher concepts and higher evolutions, from there you can jump off and go, because again, the Digimon games after the first one get weird, still fun, but weird in terms of how experimental and just kind of creative concept stuff they introduce. You know, the second one, you're driving around in a tank most of the time. It's more of a turn-based combat, similar to Pokemon, and it's bizarre. That's the one I look back on the most and go, what were you smoking when you came up with this game? Because this is so far removed from anything else, but it's still fun. To cycle back, yeah, the first game, you've never experienced Digimon before ever, the first game I think is the best way to get introduced to it. Because if you don't like the first game, you're not going to like anything else. And if you really like the first game, or even like it a little bit, you might like everything else more once you delve deeper into it.
I think that last one is a really good reason to give people this one, now that I hear you say it.
Yeah, because like I said, it's the game itself is very simplistic. It just deals with the bare bones of what Digimon is in an interesting way, and it just kind of gets you used to, again, it's the trial run, it's the basics. Here's this. If you like it, cool, got more for you. If you don't, stop here, you know, go try Yu-Gi-Oh. I don't know.
I haven't tried Yu-Gi-Oh yet, and I'm scared because I'm going to have to.
Oof, that's another conversation for another day.
Yeah, I might have to come talk to you about that later.
Yeah, you might have to.
On a completely separate note, who is your favorite Muppet?
My favorite Muppet?
Yep.
That's a tie between Beaker and the Swedish Chef. Because they don't speak, because it's hard, because you don't always know what they're saying, and so it relies so much on the physical antics, and it gives them a chance to be Some of my favorite stuff with Beaker is just the way they get him to emote. You know, hiding his face in his shirt so just his eyes are appearing out. And with Swedish Chef, it's just the way that it's mumble, and you get like one word, one actual word, and you suddenly realize, like, I'm one of the few people who really liked the ABC pseudo reality show they did with the Muppets. And at one point, Miss Piggy's dating Josh Groban, and nobody can find her. And they're like, "What happened to her last night?" And Swedish Chef comes in, "Groban to Groban," and you know immediately what he's talking about at that point. Yeah, those two always make me laugh more. Plus, I'm an idiot, and I like things that are childish and silly and make weird sound effects. So I'm a sucker for that.
Hence why I asked you to be on the show.
Appreciate it.
Well, Mike, it has been great talking to you about all this. If people want to hear more from you, where else can they find you around the internet?
I'm all over the internet. You find me on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Mr. Mike Shea. And check out my podcast, The Basement Lounge. It's me and Mike Wells. We're two comedians talking about all the craziness in the world and trying to make light of it. And it is an NSFW podcast. It is rated R, but it is funny. And you can check that on all the podcast apps, The Basement Lounge. Go to our website, tblpod.net.
Well, that is what headphones are for.
That's true. Yeah, don't listen to our show without headphones.
But also, as always, we will have links to all that stuff down in the show notes, because clicking links is so much easier than trying to remember how to spell things.
Oh, yeah. No, I can tell you. I could tell you where to go all day, but if there's a place, just scroll down and click the thing. You'll be fine. The internet's a wonderful tool.
As always, if you want to catch me, the best place to do that is over at playcomics.com, where there's links to all the social media stuff, including Twitter, where you can find me at PlayComicsCast, over at the Discord channel on the Gunna Geek server, playcomics.com/Discord, because I like having easy links, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, playcomics.com, it's all right there. It's like Linktree, except I get to have other things. It's called a full website. I love it. If you want to help support the show, you can head on over to playcomics.com/support, where there are options where you can give money, or you can just take this podcast and shove it into other people's ear holes with consent, because that is important, but you're getting them to listen to it, which is also cool. That's really all you need. Like I mentioned before, Play Comics is a part of the GunnaGeek.com network, home to a bunch of other wonderfully geeky shows, my favorite of which, completely unbiasedly, is Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., because they let me be on it, and I get to say things, and then I don't have to edit. I'm sure that I will at some point, but for the most part, I don't, which is very, very nice. If you like the music that I'm rudely talking on top of right now, head on over to soundcloud.com/best-day to check out Best Day's music. But most of all, just grab a game, grab a stack of comics, and go find yourself a new favorite character.